What's up, everybody? It's your favorite host from the West Coast, Armand Uno. In today's episode, we have Mavis Herrera. She is the founder of MCH Fashion, a sustainable fashion company, which, as we know, that industry is not known for its sustainability, that reuses plastic and turns them into purses created by indigenous artists. Now, in 2021, they repurposed the equivalent of 48,000 plastic water bottles. And what they do with some of their profits is they donate. And last year, they donated up to 1,000 shoes to underprivileged children, as well as Mavis likes to teach financial skills and personal development to women, including some of these indigenous artists themselves. She is a wonderful person. This is a wonderful episode, and you're going to find out what she likes to do for fun. Welcome to the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Doing great. This morning you were doing a radio in Miami. Now you're doing a podcast. So you've just been talking all day.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm high on caffeine.
That's great. All right. So we got Mavis Herrera here, the founder of MCH Fashion. That's right. I remember, did you guys change the name? Did you recently rebrand or?
No, actually we incorporated the business. So it's MCH nice. Fashion Inc. and doing business as Mavis by Herrera. Yeah, so.
Sweet.
Got some structure going on.
Yeah, I noticed on your background, it had like a little, it was like the Mavis brand and then it became the incorporated. So that's why I was like a little confused. But yeah, you're the founder of that. And we're going to get into that whole story. And some of the hobbies that you'd like to talk about is cycling and solo backpacking, which, again, very interesting. And I would love to hear more about what you do there. But one thing that I do want to start off and I want to ask is, it seems like you've had the entrepreneurial bug for quite some time, because I noticed back in 2010 you started a boat company, Pacific Boat Services. What was that and how did that sort of begin?
Yeah, so after came after I graduated from college, I just saw an opportunity in the boat industry, kind of like boat watch, repairs and everything. So we run a company and it was very successful as well. There was not a lot of competitors and we pretty much repaired maintenance boats and the brokers were our customers. So whenever there was a boat show, they were the team to hire us and we go and prepare the boats for that boat show pretty much.
Oh, I see. And so there weren't that many competitors. And were you doing this at the same time as you had another job or was this your main gig?
I did have another job. So I was running boats like,
wow.
Just, you know, like it was good to get an extra paycheck, like coming in, being secure and then having like the business, like starting moving the people around. But that was more I did have a partner at that time and I was in charge of the business side about getting the customers, like the contracts and the agreements, the payments, all that stuff. And he was more in charge of the people, like hiring the people, like getting the jobs done and everything. Yeah. And then I just like decided to go. So pretty much sold part of it and just move on.
Nice. That's so you just exited, got out.
Yes.
And then I saw, so you had a couple jobs here and there, but then one thing that struck was your job at PriceSmart and you went into the e-commerce side. Now, is that kind of the beginnings of, when did you knew you had a passion for e-commerce? And I guess because your thing is bags now, but.
Yes. It's a great question because more than a passion for commerce, e-commerce, I would say going into that position, and I have an amazing boss and the team was great. It just like exposed me. Back then, I was really into data analytics, so business intelligence. So I went back to UCSD and I took some courses and I learned a lot on programming, which I realized I don't like programming, but I like working with engineers. It's fun. Yeah. I would never say we can't do this. I was like, yes, you can. You just like have to do SQL or use Python or which programming are you using. Like it's going to work. So it really gave me the background and knowledge to make things happen. But it was pretty cool because it just opened my eyes of what I was capable to do. And that was like very powerful. So if I can create and run an online business, create from scratch, then I can do it one myself. And that's kind of like how it started.
Interesting. Wow. So, and I know you made the site completely by yourself and everything, right?
Yes. So from the website design, the photography, ooh, the SEO, the contents, everything, like everything you see on my website, on social media, everything, from the bags, the product, like yeah, everything, I have done it myself. I haven't hired no one. I'm self-funded. So money, it has to be spent like in a smart way where we're going to use it so we can get the best return out of it. So there were some times that I didn't know I was able to do some things, and it really impressed me that I was. I'm not going to lie. There were some days that I had no sleep at all. I went 3 days without sleeping. Special when I was switching.
That's where the caffeine comes in.
Oh, yeah. Caffeine and, oh, my gosh. I drink a lot of coffee. I just remembered that day that I needed to merge. It wasn't a Super Bowl day, like 2 years ago. And I needed to merge from my old platform to my new platform. And that migration needed to happen at night where people, so that way I would not lose sales.
Yeah.
So it was me learning this new platform because it operates completely different than the old one. And I remember, I mean, I was with customer service, like engineers, like I was like, okay, this is not working. I tried this. But they were very helpful when I was able to get stuck. But I did it. Like it happened at 3 a.m. I remember my friends were at my house. They were watching the Super Bowl. And I was like literally my computer. I started working from like 4 in the afternoon, and I finished like in 2 a.m. They even like the Super Bowl finished, and they went to a bar like for after for a party, and I stayed home working. And they just look at me like, oh my God, you're so dedicated.
It sounds like you're also very much willing to take risks, because if something were to have happened to your site during the migration, like that's correct. Like you would have lost sales the next day. There would have been like a whole other issues, but you were like, no, I'm doing this by myself and I'm going to make it work. And you made it work.
Yes.
Right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a great story.
Yeah. Now, the beginnings of your company, I was also looking into the background, the about section, and you mentioned something about a run back in spring 17 where something happened to you. What happened to you on that run, and how did that lead to the start of you leaving your job and starting your own company?
Yes, that was, I guess, the very highlight of me making the decision, you know, so I'm a cyclist, I'm a runner, marathons, like I was, that time I was training a lot. I was riding 300 miles per week on my road bike and running 35 to 50 miles per week. So somehow I just developed a very low heart rate. And during my run, I just went unconscious. And I remember waking up and I was in the ICU. My life completely changed.
Really?
My heartbeat was dropped to 23, 24.
Yeah, that and doesn't sound healthy.
That doesn't sound no healthy. I'm no
doctor, but that doesn't sound great.
I woke up and I was next to like a couple machines. And there was a nurse, I remember, say, like, looking at the monitor, like, every second because they were, they knew that my heart was going to stop at any second. So they have me ready to bring me back alive. So that's scary. And it was very scary. I just remember my body being so tired, I couldn't wake up. I couldn't stay awake for, I don't know, minutes. So every time I opened my eyes, I didn't know if that was going to be the last time that was gonna, my eyes were going to be open or where I was going to be or the last time that would close my eyes. You know, it was scary. Good thing that my heart rate went up to 28, 30 and it didn't drop. So that was good for the doctor to release me. So I was released after a week and being in ICU, and that kind of like changed my life completely. It was like, if And I was released, like, not like, oh, you're good to go, go back to your... No, it was like...
Go back to running, you know, like, 50 miles a week, yeah, go ahead.
No, it was with that. Like, they put me on a Holter monitor and say, maybe during your sleep, your this can happen again and your your heart can stop. Imagine, like, every day knowing, like, oh, my gosh, like, this could be my last day of my life.
Yeah.
Today might be my last day. And that was very powerful for me. So I say to myself, if this is going to be the last day of my life, it's going to be the best day ever. And that's kind of like my mantra, what happened. Like, I start every day and still today, you know, because I still have a very low heart rate. It's just more stable now. I'm back now into running, cycling, maybe not too much endurance to prevent going to that state.
Yeah.
But I'm really enjoying every day as the best days of my life.
That's honestly, that's really inspiring. Yeah, that you could turn that around and you could turn such a difficult, dark moment into positivity for you every single day that you wake up thinking, if this was my last day, could I look back and say that I lived it well? I think that's really cool.
Yes, and also was like, if this is my last day, like if I have the pleasure to visit this day here in life, what can I do better? Mm-hmm. What can I do? To create a positive impact.
What was going on in your mind when you were sitting there in the hospital thinking, okay, this could be my last moment, and then it wasn't, and you kept going, you get sent back home, and it wasn't your last moment, but you still you were aware of the fact that it could be. What was going on in your mind then, and how did that lead to the formation of your company?
Yeah, I just like pause because I'm thinking about it, like, oh my gosh, it was tough, you know, but there was also part of me was acceptance. Accept the things that you can't change, and if it's meant to be the life that's going to be over for me, then I will make this the best day of my life. I mean, what else can I do?
Yeah,
there's things that you can't change. And doctors, I mean, they were doing me a lot of analysis, tests and everything to figure out exactly what was going on, but there was really nothing, like, there was no clear explanation. Then I just developed a new very low heart rate and I have to live with this. And they even talking about surgery, but they say, like, you're too young for this type of surgery. It's like, you're not going to make it, because that means that if you live into your 60 years, 70s, you're going to go through 7 different surgeries. Every 10 years, we need to replace it. So this is a surgery that we pretty much do it for people who are, like, under 70s, 80 years, and you're only 30, so it's like too soon. So for me, it just changed my life, the way I see things. I really appreciate every little part of nature, live and think. Just be thankful for what they are, why you're here, and just make the best of it. And that kind of leads me into starting my business. I really believe in creating a business for good, a business with purpose, a business that it will not harm our environment, and it's good for our people. I really want to give back, and I want to do it, like, my way.
Yeah.
And that's how it started, Mavis by Herrera. So I said, I'm going to create a bag. It's going to be handmade, made 100% from recycled materials to reduce plastic pollution. And then it's going to be by this amazing artisan by hand. And not only that, when I sell a bag, we're going to give back. So that's pretty much how I started the business.
And I love the mission that you guys have, that everything you've done. This is one of the bags, by the way. I don't know if you can see it, but it's made purely by recycled material. It's so awesome. All the bags are made like that. They're all made by indigenous artisans. And I was looking that you actually have a program to give back to these artisans. So what is it that you do for them, and how do you help them out? Because I mean, they're helping you with these lovely looking bags.
Yeah, well, we're all a team together. So that's so the way we help them out, it's just that I just didn't want to create jobs, you know. It's regenerative. So sustainable is the creation of jobs and make it ethical. They work from home. But it was the part of teaching the business skills. And, like, I really want to patch all my knowledge that I have learned and experienced in 14 years in working in international businesses. But it was more about teaching them skills, how to set up a pricing, how to sell their labor, how to thrive. And it's not just about the bags, it's about their dreams. Where you want to go? What do you want to do in life? How can we support you? How can I help you? And I will do anything to do it, you know, to satisfy their dreams. If their goal is to build a house, well, let's get it done. If it's to have some water, then how can we create that? It's not really about me, what I see that you should be doing. It's like, honestly, it's about one each one of them, what are their dreams and how a bag can actually make their dreams come true. Now, and the other part that I'm so excited is like giving back a pair of shoes to kids in need. So I'm so honored because last year we donated 1,000 pair of shoes.
Nice.
And it was like the most amazing thing ever. It was one of the biggest moments of my life. And I personally went to the indigenous camps, and I personally feed everyone their feet to the little kids and put a cheese on every little kid. And that was one of, I mean, I have no words to explain the feeling of this, but this is like, this is what I do, what I do.
That sounds awesome. It's so, when you're helping these artisans, it's not so much that you have one thing that they're all getting the same type of like one help. It's like that. It's static. It's more like each individual, whatever their needs are, you work with them to help them out, as you were saying. And I think that's a really cool way of showing them that they are a part of the team as well.
Yes, my next goal is actually to pay for someone's college education, because I do believe that everyone deserves the opportunity to go to school. And the ones who want to thrive and are very like struggling financially, why not help them out? Like, seriously, like, and that's my next goal. I really want to support someone and like pay for someone's college education. And we're going to do that. Like, I'm so excited.
That is an exciting next step. And where are these artists from?
They are in Mexico. We have them in Saguayo, Michoacán, and then we have it in San Cristóbal de las Casas in Chiapas, in Oaxaca, Sierra Norte. I'm so excited. I make a pause with Oaxaca because they're on my elderly people.
Are you from Oaxaca?
No, but I'm just so attached to them because they're my grandmas. It's a small community of 10 older people and... Well, I call them grandmas. I'm going to call them grandmas. So my grandmas, actually, they do this amazing waving. And they're in their 60, 80 and years old. And it's just like, I just adopt them all. I call them grandmas.
I asked because I recently took a trip to Oaxaca for the first time back over in November. And it was such an amazing place in Mexico. Like, my family has Mexican heritage, but we're from the north side, like Monterrey, Nuevo León, the state. I'd never been that far south of Mexico. And it was so much more similar to like my dad's culture in El Salvador, from like the foods they had, the fruits they had, like the way that they lived their life, because it's more like Central American. And one thing I noticed is that they have incredible artisans, not just for weaving, but they had... like, you know, Coco, the alebrijes?
Yes,
the alebrijes. Like those, yeah, they had those really cool, like, statues of mixed animals where they paint with bright, beautiful colors. Yes. Like, it was just a very artistic place in general. I loved it there.
Yeah, Oaxaca is very rich, like, their culture.
And they love their culture so much.
The way they make the mole.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, there's like 38 different types of species. It's crazy. I wish I can learn. But yeah, also their work, their art, you know, everything is handmade. And a lot of times it's sad because us, like Amia talking now as a Mexican, like, it's sad because a lot of times our own like culture like doesn't even appreciate that. I see like more people appreciating the bag from other countries than our own culture, and which is sad, you know? But we do need to stop and really appreciate, show how the bags are done, 100% handmade, and it takes 5 days.
Wow.
And it's like...
And how do they use the recycled material to make the bags? Like, that's something I was wondering. I was looking at this and like, it's so beautiful. And it's made out of recycled material. Like, how does that work?
Yes. So there's a two recycling companies where I get the raw material, the recycled materials. I spend there a month learning about how they recycle the plastic, how they separate it, how they come out even with the color, how much toxin chemicals are they putting, how can we put less chemicals, how can we make it sustainable, how they clean it, how much water is spent, like all... Literally, the time that I spent there, I thought they were going to kick me out because I was like, because I need to know this.
Yeah.
In order for me to make a product, I really need to be behind the scenes and learn every little aspect. But it's pretty cool because where we get the recycling company is from Guadalajara. It's a company. And actually, like, it comes from plastic bottles, plastic bags. You know, when you order something from Amazon, all that little plastic comes extra that you literally just grab it and put it in the trash. Well, we recycle that. And then we separate it by colors. And that's how we get like a blue color. We start mixing it up. And that's how we get the gray color. So the batch of the color that we have is going to be different from another batch because it was on the second batch. So the color is not always going to be 100%. Why? Because I'm not adding the chemicals, the toxins, to make it 100%. I'm just letting it to be itself, like recycled plastic, and that's just how it is.
This is an ad. No, it's not. We don't really have any sponsors right now, but if you would like to give me money to talk about your product, let me know.
This is like the things that we need to preserve because we need it. Like, look how much chemicals are we using that are actually polluting, destroying our environment, the water, the ocean. And not only that, like, also cause harm into our humans, like, in the long run, you know? So if we, there's nothing wrong, like, just stay natural, you know? And appreciate the color as it is, natural.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you have this really cool quote on your site that says, "When you buy an MCH bag, you have a powerful story to tell." What exactly is that story? Is it the story of the artisans or the recyclable? Is it all of it together? I'm curious.
Is it? It's all together, to be honest. When I really started designing the bags, I wasn't designing for everyone, you know? I was designing for, I always say, this is for strong, bold individuals who don't need brand recognition because they're so powerful that they know who they are and they are enough. And those are the people that I call them change makers. They're here in this world and they're saying yes to a sustainable change and they're actually the people who are going to change the world. So when I say you have a story to tell, you know that when someone asks you, "Oh, this is my bag," it's not like, "Oh, it's from this designer." And normally you go to the price. Now you have a bag that like, oh, it's made from recycled plastic materials. And it's handmade. And actually, when you get one bag, you give a pair of shoes. And you create this regenerative impact. It's paying for someone's college education. It's actually helping people like indigenous artisans to thrive. It's creating a lot of impact. So that's kind of like the story to tell, you know?
Yeah. That is a very powerful story, I will say. That's really cool. And the bags show, I keep saying it, man, they show the quality. Like, they show the effort. They look great. I like that. And now you have a story behind the name of your company. What is that?
Yes. I kind of, like, don't share this a lot, but I will share it. So when I started the company, first, I started with a different name. And I started with a different concept. It was bags, but they were not these bags. It was something different, completely. It was more like hand painted or something. But so let me just go back a little bit with this big company. I spent 3 months working on the website, 3 months, almost four. And once it went live, I shut it down after the fourth day because I didn't feel it. It wasn't the right product. It wasn't me. I just felt I wasn't being me. And why do I want to start a company, even with a product, if I don't feel that it's me at all with my values? So I shut down everything. And then I was doing the recycle part. And I was like, I'm really going towards this. Then I'm just going to create like bags, but it's going to be recycled. So that day I got a sale and it was so excited. I got this big sale, wholesale. So I called my grandma and she lives in Los Angeles and I was going to tell her the big news, but I ended up having a bad news that I needed to go to ICU because my grandma, it was on her last days and she was just going to be, she was going to be gone. So I dropped everything. I dropped to LA from San Diego. I went to ICU. I grabbed my grandma's hand. And that's kind of when the inspiration comes, like, grandma, I'm starting this. I'm going to make bags. I recycle plastic. And not only that, remember you used to wave. It's kind of similar. And she was unconscious. She was there. And I just kind of like feel a little squeeze. And for me, that was her approval. So I say bye to grandma. I say, you're going to go in heaven. You're going to watch me. And I'm going to stay here and there. So I say bye to grandma at the hospital. I drove back to San Diego. And less than, I remember, I didn't sleep that night. But the next day, I had Mavis Barrera running on the website. I just didn't sleep. I was just so inspired with so much. Like, it's hard to explain because part of me was really hurting, you know, about losing my grandma. But the other part of me, it gave me, like, I don't even know how to describe it, this power, like, to keep going, to not stop. So Mavis is actually my name. And Bayerrera is for my grandma. So Mavis Bayerrera.
Wow. And I like that a lot. And I'm sure she's watching over you for all of your successes, which I've heard you've had very many. Is there any you would like to share right now? Any of the big wins you've had recently?
Yes. So during COVID, okay, when I started, it was like a few months before COVID happened. And then COVID happened. And before COVID happened, I was already in, we're going to be at Balboa Museum Store, Hotel Del, and San Francisco MoMA Museum.
Nice.
So those were like big wins.
Yeah.
But guess what? 3 months later, before we our lunch, COVID hit. So everything got canceled. And that's when I knew, like, oh my gosh, like, this is it. So I literally put any strategy, I put it in the trash, and I start operating with my heart. If COVID is going to close, shut down my business, then at least I'm going to fight, and fighting with all my heart is the best I can do. And that's what I did. And that's actually when someone heard the story and get to someone by word of mouth, they told about the bags, about me. She contacted me, and she started, like, they do gifting experience, and we do like private bags for them to give out to conference and business conference. So the bags being already in different parts of the world. We sold the first bag to Singapore, but not just Singapore. It was Miss Universe Singapore. And it's going around. So, but it's very interesting because it's just by word of mouth. I have not invested on marketing agencies or TV news, like anything like that, you know. It's just being like actually a very blessing to be there. So those, I will say, those are my big wins, like the word of mouth right now.
Yeah.
And customers like really liking the product, and or just like something simple, like how amazing is this that I get a letter from a customer, just being grateful, like a thank you letter. Like it was, I still have it, and it was from my customers, one from Miami, and it was just like, wow. I mean, like, can you have a customer send a letter to you? How many letters do you send to the brands that you buy, you know?
Not very many.
I don't think no one does that. But someone who took the time to send me a letter for
being grateful. Nobody sends letters anymore in general, like today in 2022. That for me, so that's impressive.
I have it on a frame because,
yeah,
wow, like, I not just sell it back. I have a customer sending me a letter. How, I mean, I'm special.
I really like everything you've been saying. Now I do want to switch it over and talk a little bit about burnout and any kind of like some of the more difficult moments you had. So you've touched a little about the start of your company and what happened to your heart. But have you had any moments as the company's run where you've just faced a lot of stress or faced any kind of burnout, anything that's
weighed heavy on you and you fought through it?
Absolutely, a lot. So I quit my job and there's no more paycheck coming in, right? And now it's all about me. And me stubborn as a person, I decide to go the hard way. Do it everything myself. Forget about investors. I'm going to be self-funded. And I'm going to figure it out and do it organically. Meaning I'm not buying for followers. I'm not paying for advertisement or to be featured on anything. It was just going to be organically. And why? Because I really wanted the product to speak by itself and see how many people will actually come. So the first year...
I just want to touch on that for a second. That's really interesting how you decided to go the hard route, but you knew something about you. You just knew that that product had such a good meaning and story behind it that other people, you just trusted that other people would see that. And it shows, like, other people have seen that. You've done great sense.
Yeah, and not only that, also, like, I mean, if you're buying something, like, I also wanted to love the product, you know?
Yeah.
And I love it myself, but I'm not like everyone. You want
them to send letters, fan letters.
Oh, I send them letters. but also it's about testing the product. Like, let's be honest. You can have all this great marketing, all this great, like, you can have all this great cause, but if you don't have, if the product is not acceptable, forget it. You're not going to get sales. So that was the other thing, like, you have to be honest. So one thing about when I started, I always say, you have to be honest with yourself so you can be honest to the world outside. Otherwise, it's not going to work. When I first started, like I say, I started with my own savings account. I sold my car. So the first year, I was riding my bike, going to the UPS, still dropping the box to be shipped. On my backpack, riding my bike, I didn't allow myself to buy a cup of coffee or even go out on the dinner nights. No dining out. Everything was because I wanted to save as much money as possible so I can invest in the company. The other thing is that I became 90% vegetarian because if you're vegetarian, you consume less meat and you reduce costs. Like, I was going crazy.
You were full bootstrapping. You were just saving every penny you can get.
Yes, yeah. I was serious.
That's what it takes. That's what it takes.
I say, at least I need to have, I mean, it's not going to happen in a month. I need to test it out for a year. And first, I was testing out the product and seeing, like, actually listen to my customers.
Yeah, the end, the market decides.
They do. And then I remember first me working on pricing strategies. I priced my product, below. I was not even making money at it. And then I had to restructure. And then adding the fees and everything. So it was tough. I'm not going to say this is not... Entrepreneur is not for everyone. Otherwise, everyone will do it, you know?
Yeah.
And also, if you're looking for people to support you, forget about it. I will say, don't even waste your time about your family supporting you. I mean, it will be nice, but let's be reality. And I'm not trying to be mean here, but a lot of times... One, as an entrepreneur, they have a vision that at that moment, no one can see it. Or your family can't see it. Or your friends. So you cannot waste your time trying everyone for waiting for their approval to see what you see. But I have to say something. You, by yourself, you better be the best cheerleader for yourself because you're going to need it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. I had times that I wanted to shut down everything and buy one flight ticket to one part of the world and just be like, I'm just going to spend my money here. Where, in what part of the world I can go and live there for a year and then come back and just get a job, you know? But then I was like, no, that's not how it is. So you need to switch mentalities. You have to have a strong mindset because there's going to be people who are not going to like your product or service. And and you're not trying to target everyone in the world, but you do need to target the specific. Once you find your customers and you know who they are, really invest in there, you know? Just value that. So I did have a lot of those moments where I wanted to give up when I have to come back to myself. And actually, your dad was one of those, he really... we have a conversation, and he saw me how I was shutting down, and he literally say, "What's Mavis? Remember your purpose," and that's all it took. And I went back and I said, "Why did I start it? I started because I want to create an impact. What impact I'm creating?" And then I start reviewing the little small wins that I have done over the year, and then I keep going, like, yeah. Unstoppable.
Yeah. Talk about a cheerleader. My dad has that. He's really good at helping people find. He's good when someone gets off the path, just putting you right back on. Yes. And setting you straight. I think so.
And yeah. That's what he did. So I'm very grateful for that, because he put me back, and I was like getting big yeah. accounts, making sales, putting the product on other stores. So it was pretty cool. But yeah, you also have to know why you're doing what, you know. And if it's about money, honestly, don't even start.
Yeah.
Because money, like, well, I see different things about money, especially, like, for me, the most valuable thing is time, because time, you never get it back. The second that just passed, it's not coming back. I don't care if you're a millionaire, a billionaire, you can't not buy time.
Yeah, that's something we all have in common. Everyone in the world, it's 24 hours in a day.
Yes, it doesn't matter who you are or where you're at. And that's something that we really have to think about it. But when you have a purpose, you know, when you have a business for good, when you have something valuable, eventually things will start falling into place and it will connect the dots. And that's actually what we need. We need more like entrepreneurs creating good in this world.
Yeah.
I mean, because I do believe that we can change it, and we are changing it.
I like that. And I also like what you said a little bit earlier about investing on your customer. Once you find that right customer, I was talking about this with one of my business partners, is how we're trying to figure out how to turn our current fans into super fans, how to get these people who already like our product and have already used it before, and how to, you know, give back to them, find a way to interact with them rather than just having it be so transactional. So I think it's very important to invest in your, once you find that right target customer.
Yes, and something to add to that, like right now, like COVID, everything you saw, like it put everything like on e-commerce.
Yes.
And yeah. We see a lot of new technology, 3D and how to test that. But honestly, I always say, and I say it and I emphasize on this, if you're running an online business, don't forget about the human kindness. Don't forget that there's another human behind that screen. And they want the human kindness contact. So mm-hmm. That's what I do. If someone calls our customer's phone number, you're speaking immediately with the person. You're not going through dial one for this, dial two for this, yeah. da, da 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 da. Or those robots like on the, no. If someone sends us a message, there's a person behind it. Because, I mean, if you get to that point, it's because you're actually looking for an answer, right? And you want the answer as a customer. So just like, just get the real person and just give them the answer.
Yeah, that's I like that. I appreciate that. I was actually having this conversation yesterday where earlier this week I was yelling at one of those robot phone dialers. And then I was like, oh, this is so childish. Like it's a dialer. Like it's not, it can't hear me. But I was just getting so frustrated. I was like, just give me a person. Give me a person on the phone. And yes. Then I was like looking at my phone like, dude, what are you doing?
I have done that. Yeah. And once I get a person, I was like, I need to speak to your boss, wherever. I need to send a recommendation because this is off. I start like evaluating like the company, and I need to like step out and be like, okay, Mavis, calm down.
All right. What advice would you give yourself now when you were starting out about the company, maybe facing stress, just anything in general, really?
My advice that I would give to myself is, do not look for being perfect. Forget about perfectionists, because perfectionists, honestly, it doesn't exist. And once you think you reach it, like to be perfect, and if you let it stay there, you're going to die. I mean, not like that. Yeah. Why?
Because your idea will.
Yeah. Everything eventually has an expiration date, and it will not be perfect, because staying perfectionist and get it to that point means that you're stop evolving. and you need to evolve. The world is evolving. Your ideas are evolving. You as a person is evolving. The business is evolving. And you got it, it needs to be a task, so evolve together. So a lot of and I say this because this happened to me. When I told you I spent 3 months working on a website, and the website was ugly at the end. I mean, now I look at it, I was like, oh, and I thought it was great. I thought it was perfect. I wanted everything to be perfect. Throw it out there. Like, don't wait to be pretty and all perfect. Just get the message, get the product, get the service, and start working on it. You can always come back and change it. That's the best thing, you know?
Have you ever read the book Principles by Ray Dalio?
No, not yet.
That's it's a pretty good book. I highly recommend it. But one thing Ray Dalio, like, one thing that he constantly stresses is that to him, one of the most important parts of life is that our goal in life is to evolve. Like, we're constantly evolving, and you're supposed to grow as a person every single day. And he does mention how, yeah, perfection is it like almost hinders you. It stops you in your tracks when you try to make something perfect. It's like you don't want to click send, or you don't want to click post, or you don't want to take that action step, because you're always going to be wondering, well, is this good enough? Is it perfect? But at the end of the day, it's not about being perfect. It's about doing it, in my opinion, at least. It's about doing it and then getting feedback from the market or from your peers, from whoever, and then making some adjustments and continue moving forward until you can do the best to your ability.
Exactly. And that's all about, like, and it's the other thing is about fear. How many times we stop doing something because we're scared?
Yeah.
And fear is an obstacle. You need to let it go. Okay. One quick story. Before I even decided to quit my job that I knew, like, it was, I was going to do it, I'm scared of flying. And that's funny because I like to travel around the world. I've been on long hours flying. But I went to this paragliding. Here in San Diego.
Over at the glider port in Torrey Pines?
It was actually here in Mira Mesa at the airport.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's paragliding. So it has a little motor. So I schedule in the morning. I said I wanted to go and see the sunrise. And I went paragliding. So it was a little tiny little airplane with a small little motor, and in less than 10 seconds we were up in the air, and then it was like and then we turned off the motor and it was gonna be scary freaking out. And we had two parachutes, like in case you want to do skydiving, something goes wrong, like
yeah,
you know. Good thing that didn't happen, but I just did that to face my fear.
Wow.
And after that I was like, okay, I can do this. And I remember also as a cycling, like, I was in charge of this project, and I did face some fear, like, oh my gosh, like, am I going to be able to do it?
Yeah.
And what I did, I went to Torrey Pines on that inside on my road bike, and the hill repeats from 4 in the afternoon till sunset. I ended up doing like 14 like hills repeats.
On the Torrey Pines Hill. Like, yeah. The one, oh,
the
wow.
one is like 10%
inside. For anyone who doesn't live bike. In San Diego, that's a steep, that's a steep, steep
Imagine
hill.
It 14 times on my road bike. And after that, I was like, if I'm capable, my body to do this amount of pain, oh, my brain can handle everything. I can do anything, you know? So it's just changing your mindset.
Yeah, I like the way you challenge yourself, especially with the fears thing. I think that's so important for anyone leading a business or starting a company, anything of the just being a person, is to be able to face your fears, because you're going to have a lot, especially when you're on your own and COVID comes, your entire business model is thrown out the window and you have to just change the way that you're doing things without a job. It takes that ability to look at your fears and say, yes, my fears are here, but I'm going to continue taking action either way, rather than a lot. The most common thing would be to run away from them.
Yes. And one thing, like, I mean, when COVID happened, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was like, okay, it's the unknown. Most businesses are going to close down and the economy is going to collapse a little bit. And it was scary. And I say, well, I'm just going to start being honest. Like, I have done. So I'm an introvert person. I don't like to speak in front of cameras, but I did. And I open up to my audience, to my customers, and be like, look, this is me behind the brand. This is what we do. This is what we want to do. And we're going to support, like, we actually went and helped feed the homeless people during COVID. And it was a great, and that opened doors. And customers were sharing about the brand, the word of mouth. It just started spreading, which is the best marketing that you're going to have.
Yeah.
So just be honest. I always say, be honest with yourself so the world can see you and you can be honest to the world. Because if you're honest, like, there's nothing to worry about or fear, you know?
Yeah, very true. And now to move on a little and talk about the fun stuff that you do. Yeah. You mentioned a little about your cycling. So you do cycling, and also another cool thing is solo backpacking. So you travel all over the world, backpack by yourself. How did both of those start? Like, what got you into these hobbies?
So for cycling, let's start first about traveling, because it's exciting. sometimes you see in a magazine, there was this mountain I always used to look at, and then on Google, it's called Fitzroy, and it's in Patagonia. And I always wanted to go, but my friends couldn't go to the same time, and then work, and then like pricing, and it was just because it's like Patagonia is kind of pricey.
Yeah.
And one day I say,
so is the brand.
Yeah. So one day I say, I'm just gonna buy my flight ticket and go on myself, and I'm gonna make my dreams come true. I'm not gonna be waiting, because if I keep waiting for someone, a friend or a partner, like, this is not gonna happen. So I'm going on my own, and I'm going to experience this. So I bought my flight ticket, and then I research, and then I say, when I travel, I don't bring a lot of stuff. I just bring a backpack and a couple outfits, but that's it. Very minimal.
How many bags?
Just one. And it's not even like a luggage. It's a backpack, like 60 liters. So I just put like my hiking shoes, a jacket, a sweater, two jeans, two t-shirts, obviously my two panties because I wash them. And then like my toothbrush, a toothpaste, and that's it. I don't even bring makeup and a trucker hat and sunscreen. There's no makeup. Like, I just go all nature. And I went. And that hike was like actually 11 hours round trip, and it was one of the most amazing things ever, like being there. And I really like connected with people. When I travel, I like to go to more like to the outside, like in the mountains where there's no transportation, where there's pretty much like no water, like no electricity sometimes, because that's where actually you connect with the people. So when I travel, I see traveling as an I'm the outsider. And then when I, at the end of my trip, I become one of them, respecting their culture, getting to know their culture. And it really teach me a lot. I guess it really teach me human kindness and just knowing that we're not the only ones. And there's amazing people out there that they do incredible things. I learn a lot. It really opened my mind of different religions.
Yeah.
And just appreciate, and I just learned that despite the differences, at the end, like, no one wants to harm no one. It's just different beliefs and ideas, you know?
Yeah, I like that you submerge yourself in that culture. I think that's a very important part of traveling, and one of the things I like so much about it is that you get to learn about people who just live so differently than you, no matter where you go. Like, even, honestly, traveling inside of the U.S., like, I was raised here in San Diego. I lived in Boston for a few years, and just the way of life and the way things are done, the way people talk, interact, it's just different. And that's one thing that I love so much about traveling, is that taking your beliefs away, stepping back from it for a little, and then just following along with what everyone does there.
Yes. And also, like, I travel and I challenge myself, you know, I don't go and luxury traveling. I limited myself to $10 a day or $5, depending on the country. Yes. And I live like a local. I stay in hostels. And I walk a lot. I take public transportation. And I just tried to be one local for a small, short period of time. And it really changed your life. Like, you get to eat, like, the local food.
Yeah.
Like, and really, like, just, yeah, like, that's, I guess that's why now my friends don't like to travel with me, because they want to stay, like, all-inclusive or resorts. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I really do. But one time I went to Indonesia, Jakarta. Okay, Jakarta is the number worst traffic in the entire world. And I crossed the street. And let me tell you, that was the most dangerous thing ever. Not only that, I was trying to make it to Bali. I was in Yogyakarta. And, okay, the flights there, you can get a flight ticket for $7, $8. But that's not the airline that U.S. Travel recommends. And then later I learned why. They're banned from flying to another country because they don't meet the security requirements. I'm glad I didn't take the cheap flight. I was like, no. I went to a different airline, which is a little bit more pricey. But I was in Yogyakarta, and I was making it to Bali. And there was a volcano erupting in Bali. So the ashes were going through Yogyakarta, so my flight got canceled. And then I went and took the train to make it. And then I was going to go on. That was crazy.
Yeah, the fact that there was a volcano going on, people are leaving, and here you are trying to go in. That's
so that's when I really stop and for a moment and think, okay, what can be the worst thing that can happen? The worst. Well, volcano is erupting. I mean, I died from a volcano eruption. Two, there's a tsunami, which in Asia, in Indonesia, you get a lot of tsunamis. Yeah. And I can be trapped in the middle of nowhere with no food. So I say, okay, if plan A, B, and C doesn't work, the next plan is come back home. And for some reason, plan A, B, and C, my way to get into Bali, it didn't work. So I ended up coming back. But I mean, I was trapped for 4 days in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, wow. So you did end up getting stranded for a little.
Yes. Yeah, and then I really sit down and think about the situation, because, I mean, it was crazy. It was all over the news. People literally, like, were trying to get out on the boat. It was like a pack of people coming.
And here
to
you were,
region.
Like, I'm and already here.
And here I am.
I'm
like, please, please take me. They were not even taking people to Bali, to inland. And I was like begging, like, even like offering to pay more to take me.
Jeez. And how does cycling fit in the mix? Do you ever go biking on any of these trips, or is that more of a low, like, here thing?
No, I rent the bike as much as I can. Jakarta, obviously, because of the traffic, I avoid it, because I was like, okay, this is it. It's not a good idea. But it's very interesting, because I went to Jamaica, not Kingston, actually, it's the outside, it's Port Antonio. And it was very shocking for me that they didn't even have a bike, because they're so poor, that little town, that there's no bike to rent. And I saw a couple bikes, but just a rim, like no tires.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that opened my eyes to see how poverty really is, you know? It just by trying to rent the bike, like, in that little town, there's only like 3 cars, and those are like the taxis. So in one car that fits 5 people, there were like 15 people on it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just like amazing to see the other perspectives of how people live. And you come here and honestly, like, we have everything. So,
yeah, the fact that it was just the rims is, yeah, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
But I guess that's another part of traveling, is you see things that you never thought you'd see.
Yeah. It really opens your eyes to appreciate what you have. And, but cycling, I love cycling. I started on my 20s. I have done 1,000 of century rides. I guess the crazy ride that I did last year was to Julian from San Diego. So it's 110 miles with more than 11,000 feet of climbing.
Yeah.
So that was a lot.
Julian's a good spot for, I recently got a motorcycle, and that's where all the motorcyclists like to go because of all the twisty roads and the winding, it's fun. I've never heard of someone biking there, especially from here though.
Yeah.
That's quite the ways away.
It was crazy. It took us all day. And funny. Once we got to Julian, we only had like 15 minutes to
have like a quick buy.
Yeah. No, I didn't even get an apple pie.
Oh, that's like the best part of Julian.
I know. It was close. And it was during COVID when we did this, right? And then I got stung by a bee, and then mile 10, like we were like really pushing it, but we were like so tired and pushing it before sunset because we didn't even bring lights with us. And it was a strong headwind, and oh my gosh. But I mean, it was a challenge. It was one of the tough rides that I have done. We do have a cycling club. It's called Barcala, and I'm kind of the board members there. So we organize a lot of group rides together, no one left behind. We take care of each other and safety first, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love cycling. It's my passion.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, there was a question I had. I forgot. It was something about cycling. No. Oh, I did. I had a comment. On the cycling thing, cycling and traveling. So I took a trip to Greece with a friend, and we went to this small island, Paros. And there was an island across from that called Antiparos, and we rented bikes there. We didn't know there was an option to get electric bikes. We just got the normal bikes. And they told us that there was this really cool, like, caves. Like, everyone who goes to Antiparos, you have to see these caves. They're really cool caves, and we didn't know much about it. But we're like, okay, yeah, if that's the thing to see, like, we're here, why not? And so we got our non-electric bikes and we cycled around and we started making our way to the caves, and we found out it was one of the steepest climbs. Like, the caves were up in mountains, and us being from, you know, San Diego, we thought they were going to be like ocean caves, like sea caves. There would be caves by the water, but no, they were in the mountains, and we had to go all the way up this like really windy, really steep road. Like, cars were coming down and they were looking at the window at us like, why are you guys biking this? Like, what are you doing? And the whole time it was miserable. And we made it to the top, and right as we made it, it was like right at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever time it was. And they were like, ah, the cave's closed.
No.
Like, it closed like 2 minutes before we showed up. So we didn't even get to see the caves. But the people that were like organizing the groups, they saw us, and they gave my friend and I like 3 water bottles each. They're like, listen,
nice.
We'll give these to you guys for free because you clearly need it if you biked up. And so that's my traveling biking story. Didn't expect to do it, but the downhill was a lot of fun.
Oh, downhill, yeah. It's fun. Yeah. I remember one time, oh my gosh, I got my mom saw my speed and she called me out. I was going at 58 miles per hour downhill. Wow. I was flying. I just knew like one little mistake and that's it. Like broken bones, broken bike, like everything. But it's the adrenaline.
Yeah.
That's what I like about cycling. I actually started mountain biking. I love climbing. I like climbing mountains. But road bike is like, how fast can you go? Like,
yeah.
There's times that I go at 32 miles per hour on flat. And oh my gosh, it's pretty amazing. And at the end, it hurts at the end, you know?
Oh yeah.
But it feels good.
I mean, I don't know from the cycling perspective. I feel you on the, just being on a motorcycle, like understanding, there was one time, like the first time I went on the freeway, I had this realization hit me where I was like, I'm not wearing a seatbelt right now. Like, I'm just on a bike. Like, it's just me sitting on this thing. Like, if something were to happen, that's that. So I get it when you're going that fast, especially downhill, like 58 on a cycling bike, which is way more impressive. You know, mine's got a motor. That's crazy. And here you are just ripping down and knowing, yeah, there's probably very few moments where you're that present, that like focused on one thing than when you're doing that.
Yeah. And we just have our helmets, right? I think the part of me, what I really, really like cycling, it's because you go inland. And here in San Diego, you disconnect from the city, and then you start feeling like that air actually going through your skin, your face, and it's just you and your bike.
Yeah.
How amazing, like, what your body can do, the places that can take you, that car will not even be able to take you.
Yeah.
You know, just those things, and seeing just nature, listen to the birds, like, it's kind of like my relaxation time, but also my inspiration. That's where, when I go back, when I'm riding my bike, that's when the ideas start to flow. And I come back home and I just shower real quick and start like executing.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
I get that. And there's something to be said about that nature. I remember another story from my motorcycle was one of the more fun realizations I had was when I was riding through a canyon and I realized I could smell the canyon. Like, you could smell everything that's going around, like the flowers and the nature. And I was like, oh, this is something I never paid attention to while I was in a car. You can never just like get a feeling for what's going on outside. And I think mountain biking would be really cool where you're going on these like off-road trails and you're just riding around. That's definitely something I'd like to get into. Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Get a mountain bike. It's fun.
A lot of my friends do it, so it would be pretty cool to do.
Mountain bike is fun. The other thing fun that we do with our bikes is that, okay, believe it or not, okay, this is how crazy we are in cycling. We rent the bus to drop us to in LA in Anaheim. Just 45 crazy cyclists rent the bus here. We drove at 5 in the morning, they dropped us there at 6, and then we rode all the way back to San Diego.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds, what was more difficult, that or Julian?
Julian, it was the climbing and the heat.
Yeah, because, that makes sense.
Also, the Anaheim all the way to Chile, it's tough. It's 108 miles. And I remember going to Camp Pendleton, and I was like, I was done. I was like, I was running out of fuel. I was hungry. So I was getting crampy, and I was like, I needed a break. Yeah. I was done. I had no energy. My body was, but we were just 3 miles before we stopped at In-N-Out. And
nice.
But it's like those moments that you're like, there are other cyclists trying to pull you to really like help you out each other. And then your body shutting down, and it's like, I guess that's the moment when, and then you make it to 3 miles, right? You make it to a stop. Like, I'm here. And that's kind of like it's hard to explain the feeling, but it's like how amazing what your body can push you. Like, your body does amazing things, and it's all in your mindsets a lot of times.
Mindset is everything. Yes.
Yes.
I think that's very true. And I can see how that carries over from a lot of the activities that you do, like from your hobbies to your work, to the fact that you just say, you know, screw everyone else, I'm just going to go travel by myself. Like, it seems that you have a very strong mindset, and it takes that kind of person to, you know, do what you're doing and build the kind of company that you're building. And I think that's really cool.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. A lot of things, it's on your mind, you know. You have to be, the mind, it's tricky. You need to learn how to control and talk to it. If not, your mindset can be your worst enemy.
Hmm.
Telling you that you can't do this.
Yeah.
That just give up. That no, let's stop. Or that you're having pain. You need to learn how to block the pain. And part of the test I have done on my body was like running a marathon without training. I wanted to see if it was the training or if it was actually I can switch the mindset and cross the finish line. And I did. But it was like really training your mindset. As your body, you also need to train the mindset to know that you are in control, not the mind over you.
I have a friend who did that where he wanted to see if he could run a mile. Or sorry, not a mile, a marathon. He wanted to see if he could run a marathon, and he didn't do a marathon. He just mapped out the route that he would have to take from his house, did a big loop or whatever, went back, and just ran it, and didn't time it. He just did it full running, wanted to see if his mind could take it, and he did the whole thing. Like, what is it, 26.5 or so?
26.3.
Yeah, he did that, and I was just like, dude, how, why? And he was like, yeah, I just want to test my mindset.
Yes. And that's why like sports, I like it because it really tests you. Not because it gets a point that it's the body, but then you're like in so much pain that you don't even like feel the pain, and that's when it switches and it's into the mindset. Like it's kind of hard to explain, but it's kind of what I like, and see like okay, my body, I know that my body's done and it's in pain, and this pain it becomes. From painful, it just become pain in general. And now it's the mind that's pushing the body and everything to keep going. So that's kind of like what I see like in the business, you know?
Yeah.
There are some painful points, but I need to stress the mind, really switch it up. and so we can move forward and just go through, because there's going to be good and bad days and times, difficult. It's part of life. It's just part of business. So it just, it kind of connected. It really helps me. Yeah. That's why sometimes when I'm kind of stressed or grumpy, I really need to go grab my bike.
It sounds like you're like finding the limits and then pushing them as far as they can go.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Mavis.
Thank you.
I really liked having you. I just have three wrap-up questions that I like asking people, and they're more for fun, but it's more for sharing. I'm curious, what are there any current artists or musicians that you've been listening to that you would like to share?
Yeah, Ethan Uno.
Ethan Uno. Excellent. That's amazing. A great one.
Everyone should go follow him.
Yeah, that's right. Ethan Uno, Uno Sound.
Yeah, Uno Sound. Is That's my number one. Okay.
All right. So Ethan Uno, that's right. Check him out. Put the link down below. No. So that's one. The second one is there any movies or TV shows that you've been watching lately? And if not, what's your favorite movie or show?
I've been watching like nature documentaries right now. Like I'm watching Iceland because I just planned a trip to Iceland.
Oh, so you're learning the lay of the land.
Yes. And I'm just learning about different national parks. Just more things to add on my exploring list. I don't have like a specific moment of time. Just like nature, Iceland, I've been learning about that.
Yeah, and it sounds like that's something very central to the core of who you are and your company is the nature, bringing back, giving back to nature, being sustainable and traveling. So that's very on brand. And lastly, what book are you currently reading, or do you have any recommendations for people out there?
I have a couple. I reading one that's called Good to Great. It's from Jim Collins. It's like if you're starting a business, like that's the book that I highly recommend. It's kind of old, but it's like one of the best.
It's awesome. I've read it before. It is a very, like, I highly recommend it as well. It's even if you, like, company, team, yourself, like so much of those principles could be applied to the individual as much as it could be to an entire organization. I really like that book.
Yeah, so I really recommend the books from Jim Collins. It's one of my favorite ones.
Very well researched.
And they talk a lot about different points of view of industries, and it's very, very inspiring. If you're starting a business, an entrepreneur, that's the book that I highly recommend.
Awesome. Yeah. And is there anywhere people could find you? Anywhere they can find your brand, these lovely bags? I'll move the laptop just so people can see.
They can go to my website, mavisbyherrera.com. I'm also on social media, Instagram, Facebook, on LinkedIn. They can also find me as Mavis Carolina Herrera. And stop by, send me a message. I'm the one responding. I love to connect with people.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on, and it was great talking to you.
Thank you.
And scene.
That.